Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in for this episode with Larry Benedict. Remember, new shows are posted every Monday and Thursday. You can subscribe to our show on iTunes and YouTube. Now, if you're enjoying the show, please leave a review on iTunes. Before I play today's interview for you, I want to give a shout out to the great sponsors of Futures Radio Show. CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. To learn more about these sponsors and the important things they are doing for futures traders, be sure to click on their logos on our website. Today, I spoke with Larry Benedict, owner of The Opportunistic Trader. Larry's an old school guy who makes a lot of his trade decisions based on feel. We talked about how he learned how to trade in the mid 80s, and we discussed what skills he's developed to become a consistent trader over a 30 plus year career. Larry contributes a lot of his success from being able to adapt to the markets, so he shares with us his process that's allowed him to be adaptable. We talked about his pre-market preparation, entry and exit strategy, position sizing, and trading psychology. Without further ado, let me take you right to that interview with Larry. Larry, thanks for joining me on the show today.
No, thank you very much.
Really excited for our call today, Larry. A couple of old school guys like you and I are going to be talking a lot about trading process today. But before we begin talking about your trading process, I think it's important for everybody listening to know how you learned about trading and specifically what markets you were trading. So let's start there.
Okay. Well, I started in the business in 1984 on the Chicago Board Options Exchange. Learning options. Family friend introduced me to the business, and they were grain traders, and they basically said that there was not a lot of money in grains. This is going back to 1984, and that they hadn't really made money in grains since the middle 70s, and that I should go learn options and equities. So I was lucky enough to get that advice, and I went down to the Chicago Board Options Exchange, not really knowing very much about the business. Started down there as a clerk for a very large local who traded the OEX, which was probably one of the best index products of its time. And it was sort of slightly after they invented, you know, put options and, you know, all those strategies came into play. But I started as a clerk and a runner, and that's sort of how I got my start in the business.
Talk to us a little bit about how you learned about scalping and who taught you about scalping.
Basically, I started in 85 with my own account, and I got a seat on the Chicago Board Option Exchange, Midwest Exchange, and I took all the money that I had at that point, which was not a lot, I started trading there and putting positions on in equity options and trying to scalp, but it wasn't really coming to me that easy. The process took a number of years to develop, kind of knocked around on the CBOE on the Midwest for a couple of years, and then got the opportunity to go to New York, where I was from. And I went back to New York and traded for a company called Fawcett. And I was put in the index options, the XMI. And going into there, which was the top stocks, the top 20 stocks that they did program trading on. And I sort of learned in the pit how to scalp. And there were just a number of locals in there that I watched and saw, you know, there was so much movement that you were able to buy an option at a dollar and a half and watch it go to three in 2 minutes. And, you know, you just learned how to, you know, buy and sell and scalp in that environment. So that's sort of where I cut my teeth. But the first 4 years were sort of knocking around, not being able to make money, not seeing, you know, a real true strategy that was making money. But I didn't want to give up. And I loved the business and it really became part of my life. And I really spent a ton of time learning, studying, and watching other great traders trade. And in 1989, I had the ability to go to Spear, Leeds & Kellogg, which was the largest specialist on the floor. And I actually became the specialist in XMI. And at one point was probably the lead specialist at the entity with the, another gentleman. So, you know, that's sort of how I got my original experience and how I sort of learned to scalp. And, you know, that would be just trading and trading a lot. And I always felt like the more I traded, the better I would do. You know, I know it's different than some other people's process, but for me, the more I tried things, the better I ended up doing. So that's sort of how I got into trading and short-term trading and scalping.
When did you start trading futures?
I started trading futures. Well, I traded futures a little bit in the 80s, like from 85 to 89, but it wasn't a true focus. But when I got into the XMI and became a specialist, I traded futures every day. And they were called the missiles in Chicago. I don't know if you remember them, but they still exist. But they were the best trading instrument, better than S&P. They had high octane volatility. And it was the first index that they ever did program trading on, like Susquehanna, you know, cut their teeth in there. And a number of, you know, Hull and a number of different firms were in there. So it was really a great place to learn. So the first time I traded futures was really in the middle 80s, but consistently in 89. And then in 1990, I was on the floor, but I literally was trading S&Ps on a headset over the phone versus S&P SPX options. So I was trading them full scale every day. And that was sort of my job. And then I was able to make the transition from being a floor guy where you saw all the flow and you saw, you know, you could get a feel for kind of what was going on there, as you know, because you were there, of, you know, just sort of like how I say how the pit swayed, you know. And, you know, I took away from that I was able to make money on the phone, not being in front of it. So as many traders had a problem for years making the transition off the floor at later times in their career, I had made that transition in 1990. And, you know, that's sort of where I cut my teeth in futures.
Let's talk about consistency. I would say this is probably one of the most popular things I get asked from traders is, Anthony, how do I become more consistent? Well, Larry, you told me that throughout your career that you've had a greater than 50% win rate in your trading, and you've had quite a long career. What did you do to develop the skill set to be able to be that consistent of a trader?
Well, I would say, you know, I developed a way to almost be an algorithm before there was an algo. So I would look at markets against other markets. So my technique was a lot of mean reversion between different markets. I would say, okay, now the market in S&P is focusing tick for tick on oil. So I would look at what was going on and I would look at relative strength versus whatever it was that we were looking at to develop my trading patterns. And what I would do is I would just as my COO would say of my fun Banyan, who watched me for probably 13 years do this, is we would call it building a base or building a snowman. We would just put the base on, we would put P&L up, and then we were able, by not changing our position sizing, to let trades go a little bit longer. So it was all P&L based. So we were very tight when we had no P&L, and when we had a P&L, we were able to take a little bit more chances and let positions, you know, go against us a little more because we were utilizing a month by month P&L. So a lot of the consistency was developed by just being consistent day over day. So 20 basis points, 10 basis points, 12 basis points. Next thing you know, we're up 50, 60 basis points for the week. We're then able to swing a little bit bigger. We're going to use 30 to 40 basis points on the next trade to you know, swing the bat. And, you know, we were able to do that, and it worked out to our favor. And, you know, it's funny, I always look like I had a guy come into my office. It's a little sidetrack, but it's important to understand in my trading methodology. So, and I think that this is kind of maybe a little bit opposite of what you would have done. But I had a guy come into my office with Bitcoin at $800, okay? And he told me that I should buy it and all the reasons, and I couldn't understand it. And I didn't buy it. But needless to say, like most people would beat themselves up and say, you know, Bitcoin was 800, you know, it went to 19,000, I'd be retired, you know, and this and that. But I know, unless I'm fooling myself, if Bitcoin went to 16,000, I would be dancing around my office and I would not be in the position. So that's really, you know, how I've always traded. I'm not looking for the home run. I'm looking for the bunt singles, and I'm looking to put what we call the P on the page or a profit on the page. And we were able to do that. And, you know, really, I would say that we had the ability to see markets against other markets that, you know, I know that at some point later we'll get into, but just the differences between the markets. But there were no algorithms in the tape. The tape was pure, and it was, you know, it was really being a very good tape reader that helped me become consistent and consistent as a scalper.
So let's peel this back. Let's start from the beginning here. Let's talk about your strategy. So you talked about you getting knocked around, learning the business, and throughout that time, you're developing a strategy. Was it technical? Was there fundamentals? Was it a combination of both? What was the foundation for your strategy?
Well, I utilized all of that, but I would really say the best part of the strategy, or the most important, was looking at markets against other markets, looking at, you know, DAX against. Now these trades don't work as well and you have to adapt. But back in the day, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, these trades worked like a charm. So you would look at markets against other markets, whether it be bonds, you know, like I would just say, like for me, if the bond traded 3% on the 10-year, which it did, you know, today and yesterday, I would look to be selling the market. But as you know, that's irrelevant to the marketplace. But those trades used to work really, really well. There were levels in different trades. We knew the levels. I did a ton of options. So I saw option pricing. I looked at volatility to size trades. I looked at option pricing of the straddle, which we do every day here. And those gave me the ability to, you know, size trades, put trades on, you know, and understand the process of what we were doing. And it was methodical. It was the same thing day in and day out. And, you know, we utilize options both to enhance return and then hedge upside and downside risk. So, you know, we kept everything pretty much under control.
All right. So let's take it to current day then. You're still consistent. And I want to know about your current process. Obviously, a lot of what you learned, like you said, some of those trades that you used to take wouldn't work now, but you've adapted, you've evolved, like all of us really have had to, right? I mean, I've had to adapt and change. So what about your process these days? Is it fundamental, technical, both? Talk to us about how you approach today's trading.
The process, unfortunately, is different now. Obviously, you have to be adaptable, and we've been able to make those changes, although it's not as easy as it once was. But, you know, I would say a lot is technical, some of it fundamental, but, you know, we know levels, we know markets, and, you know, what's happened now is, and you've probably seen this, the algorithm can just completely do something that doesn't make any sense longer than you could possibly stay in the trade. So knowing that, we're sizing smaller and we're trying to stay in trades a bit longer than we have in the past. So yes, we are scalping. And as we discussed on the phone, I used to trade, you know, 80,000 minis every single day. If I trade, I don't know, 5,000, it's a big day now. So obviously markets have changed. The way to get filled on stuff is significantly different and much, much harder. The algorithm is basically running, you know, in front of your orders or making it harder for your orders to be filled. So, you know, we've been adaptable. We're very cognizant of the technical and fundamental levels and what's going on around the market. But, you know, we utilize options a lot. So we'll look at pricing, we'll look at volumes. So we use options a lot in our analysis of the tape and what's going on. And, you know, I'll point out this year is very interesting because you have markets that are so divergent. You have the U.S. market, you know, up, you know, 8 on the S&P and the DAX down 9 and China down 20. So these are things that, you know, we've never seen before, and we have to be adaptable to the stuff that's going on in the market. So I would say that, you know, the process is similar, but the sizing is smaller. We let the trades try to work a little bit longer, and we certainly don't trade near as much as what we did before.
Okay, a few things I want to talk about. I want to talk about the technical tools you're using, how you go about learning fundamentals, and I want to ask you a little bit more about options analysis and how you implement that. But let's start with technical. What's your favorite technical tools?
I'll look at Fibonacci. I'll look at some charting, but, you know, the technical levels are just levels that, you know, are used as a baseline. I don't use them day over day, but I'll know the levels where the market should technically hold. So I'm using, you know, technicals in that format, but it's more, you know, like I said before, market against other market.
Let's talk a little bit about your fundamental analysis. Now, I don't need to know everywhere you're going to get fundamental analysis, but what are some of the things that you're doing on a regular basis to, let's call it, get the fundamental theme of what's happening in the markets you are trading?
Well, you know, we'll look at the fundamentals of the tape versus earnings, you know, different stock groups, and sort of looking at analysis of other markets versus our market. So the fundamentals are really looked at in that process. But, you know, it's not, you know, we'll look at that stuff, but it's not critical to our trading.
Gotcha. So you mentioned markets versus markets a lot so far today. Give us an example, you know, a recent example of something you're looking at in one market versus another market.
Okay. Well, like I do a lot of mean reversion. Okay. So for me right now, I would want to be long China, short the US. It's a tough trade. I haven't put it on. I'm starting to look to put that on. I like all, you know, I fully believe that markets revert to the mean, and that's what's made us successful for all these years. So the bottom line is, you know, we're looking at these markets, and China, you know, being down 20 looks like an opportunity for me. You know, I'll express it in an equity index and then maybe stay short S&Ps against it. Obviously, We're going to be small right now. The trade, if we put it on a couple of months ago, would not have worked well, but we haven't gotten to it. But as far as scalping and as far as trading, I mean, S&P is the main market that we look at, you know, and it's, you know, listen, I think it's fundamentally overvalued. I think, you know, it's been overvalued for a while, but the bottom line is we have to be adaptable to that.
So something I'm interested in is you talk about building this fundamental theme. And right now you're talking about how you think that there's an opportunity with China down 20% and you think the S&P is overvalued. So there's going to be a long-term trade where you're going to be long China, short S&P. What I'm curious about is, are you taking that long-term fundamental theme that you're building and then using that to help you execute on the short term? Meaning, are you now going to start looking to trade S&P scalping aggressively to the short side and China to the long side?
As far as trading on a day-over-day basis, I don't let anything get in the way of what is happening that day. You know, it's an interesting week, actually. It's an option expiration week. The triple expiration and an S&P dividend. So traditionally, these are up weeks for whatever reason, but this week started down. So we have to adapt, you know, what we're looking at to the market action. So, you know, right now, you know, I think that I would play it by maybe buying some, you know, out of the money call spreads for later in the week. I know they have the China deal, you know, that they're talking about. You know, beat the tariffs today. So we'll see how that impacts the market. But what's made us good for a number of years is being adaptable, not really having that market opinion. I don't know if you were the same way when you traded. You know, obviously I have an opinion, but I don't want to let that get in the way of how I'm trading and what I'm doing on a day over day basis.
Yeah, for me, when I was scalping, I could care less what was going on pretty much anywhere else besides my market. Nowadays, that's changed for me. So nowadays, I'll trade typically one direction in whichever market I'm trading, primarily S&P and 10-year. And I'll try to keep a position on intraday after I watch the first hour, and then I'll maybe scalp around that core position. Nowhere near as active, but I do need to know fundamental themes now. I do need to see what's happening on the bigger picture much more now for me because of my positioning and the way that I've changed. But something else that you mentioned, I want to go back to real quick, because this is something that I've been trying to implement more in my trading. And also I know that in our industry, options continues to grow and it's growing rapidly. So I'm wondering, how are you using option analysis to help you with trading?
Great question. Basically, that's been the key to pretty much all the money that we've made over the years, okay? And what we try to do is we try to look at straddle pricing, okay? Now you got to realize, backing up a little bit, we used to have one expiration for options a month, okay? Now we have potentially 3 to 4 a week, depending. We could have a Monday, a Wednesday, a month end, and a Friday. So we could almost have an option expiration every single day of the week. So it's changed up a lot. But if we're looking at a day option, we look at the straddle price to decide how to size up the position. So if the straddle price is 40 basis points, we would size accordingly. Obviously, we have to be adaptable because the straddle could be wrong, but most of the time, the straddle is pretty much spot on. So we use that to size positions, and then we're able to either sell options, net, or spreads, and take in premium by doing that as well. So, you know, like you may say, hey, right now the S&P is trading at 2890, and you might want to be short, but you may not feel that convicted. So we might say, hey, we want to short the S&P if it gets above 2900 today. So we may sell an S&P 2900 call, covering it with an option up top, and then having the ability to not really be involved in that trade per se. So, you know, that's a lot of the stuff that we do with options. I've probably made, you know, tons of money trading options, and it gives you the ability to stay in positions a lot easier than straight futures.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have been over the last couple of years slowly adding options to my trading. A lot for me still to learn, and that's for a different conversation. But one thing that you mentioned, I just want to make sure for those that don't understand it, is a straddle. Just a quick explanation to everybody what a straddle is.
Okay. The straddle is the at-the-money put and call. Okay, so if the future is trading, let's use a round number at 2,900 on the S&P, that would be the 2,900 put and the 2,900 call. And you would add those two prices together on the bid side, and that would give you the bid price of the straddle. And the straddle, let's say, would be, you know, for an expiration tomorrow, probably would be somewhere around, well, there's tariffs tonight, but maybe $10, $12. So you can either buy or sell that or not do anything. So the bottom line is that straddle is what basically, and this is what's interesting. I wouldn't call it betting, but that's what they're wagering that they're willing to sell the put and call at. So that being said, the straddle is the at the money, put in call.
Gotcha. So a lot of what I'm gathering from what you're saying is you're very discretionary. You have some things, let's call it checklists of things that you go through and you're looking at options and what's the fundamental theme of the market, what markets against the markets that I'm trading, how are they looking, what's happening there. You have some basic technicals that you're looking at, but nothing systematic there. Take me through a preparation before you begin to trade.
Well, okay. So the preparation never really stops. And unfortunately, or fortunately, as you know as well, these markets rarely close. So right now the market's shut for an hour and then it reopens. So the preparation goes on pretty much all night, unfortunately. So you have one eye on the market. And the preparation for me is I always have call levels at a firm. So if the market happens to move off of news at night, I'm going to get a call in the middle of the night, which my wife isn't too pleased about, but it's been going on for years. And we keep an eye on the markets overnight. And then the preparation starts from the minute I get up. I'll scour Asia, Europe, and the U.S. markets. I'll look at currency markets. I'll look at the bonds are important to me, although they haven't been as important as they have in years past. Obviously, oil is a great trading market and is important, and gold as well. So I would look at all of those markets pre-coming in or on my way in, and you know, that would get me prepped for the day. Now, depending on whether or not I would have an overnight position, I could either be stopped out or I could be taking a profit overnight, or, you know, repositioning during the day or holding the position. So that's sort of the preparation for the morning trade.
I want to talk specifically about futures entries now. Take us through how you approach an entry. Are you scaling in? Is it all at once? Same size all the time? How are you determining your stop? Walk us through that process a bit.
Okay. I would say that I'm putting pretty much the full position on when I'm going in, especially if I'm scalping. And I'm putting a stop in the market immediately and then going to trade that trade for, you know, a certain amount of P&L. What's a little bit different about the process in this is I may, depending again on the P&L, okay, if we're having a really bad month, I don't really do this because you can't. But if I'm doing okay, my exit point will be less of a profit than my stop point, which people are like, oh, you know, people are like, oh, I trade for 3x on my profits, and on my losses, I lose 1x. And I find it really hard to do because really most of the time we never hit 3x or 2x. So for me, I'd rather, you know, scalp it, be in it, you know, and, you know, try to take advantage of the P that I talked about, putting the P on the page and doing the best that I can with it.
Explain what goes into your decision making a little bit when you're scalping. We know a lot of what you're doing is discretionary. I understand that because you're going in, you've talked about all the different things that are in your mind through your preparation and everything you're looking at, getting to the point of now entering the market as a scalper. How are you determining your stop? Are you using any technicals for entries or even for exits? What's the process there?
I look at technical levels. They're not as important to me as just, I do a lot of testing. So, you know, I might be bullish and I'll test and it doesn't work and I get out, and I test and it doesn't work and I get out. And, you know, I would say that the process is just testing, a lot of feel, you know, a lot of just, you know, trying to put a profit on the page.
So when you say feel, like I call them feelers, maybe we're talking about two different things, but even in the days where I was trading multiple hundreds of contracts at a time, I would put on a lot of times a one lot or a two lot just to feel the market. Is that what you mean?
No.
Okay. So explain to me what you mean by testing.
Just testing, you know, obviously the market's different now, but let's say we're going back 5, 10 years. You know, I would buy a couple of hundred. Okay. It would work. I would get out. Like you were saying before, you know, you would trade for 50 cents. You know, I was trading for $1, $1.25. And I would just trade so many times that it wasn't really, you know, obviously technicals are important. And if you're going to hold a trade a long time, obviously, you know, that stuff is more important. Mine was more feel, like just general feel, looking at the tape, feeling the tape, being an old school, what I call tape reader.
So you were never changing your contract size. You would just trade.
No, I would change it up for sure. Like if I had a couple of losing trades, then I would cut the size, you know, and then, you know, depending on how I was doing, I would stop myself out in a day, you know, any day the P&L was down 2% for the day. And, you know, if you look at my track record from 2000 to basically 2013, you know, we probably didn't have a peak to trough drawdown of more than 2.5% peak to trough.
So something I used to do a lot and actually helped me make a lot of money as a scalper was press. And I would wait to see how the market would react to my initial entry. If the market came right off my initial entry and I had a nice size position on, I would either double or even triple up my position. Did you ever press, and do you press nowadays?
No, I did a ton of pressing. I would actually, you know, average in on stop. What I mean by that is if I sold 90, let's say the market was at 28.94 and I sold 94s and we were trading 90, I would add to the position on stop. So I would actually have the market order in the marketplace beforehand and I would stop in. And if the trade took quickly, I would let it run. But if it didn't, you know, I would minimally get out of what I stopped into and then potentially the whole trade. But yes, I press trades. You know, I was able to, you know, maneuver in the marketplace in that fashion. But, you know, I never had like a monster, you know, listen, I had very big days, but never, you know, I was running probably close to $1 billion. So, I mean, you understand the percentages on that, you know, so, you know, we were taking millions and millions of dollars out. So, but the answer to your question is, yes, I definitely, you know, put bigger positions on and, you know, put larger size on when I was winning. And, you know, I would press when I was making money for sure.
These days, are you using any automation at all, or is everything still point and click and discretionary?
I'm embarrassed to say, I am pointing and clicking like, I guess like a dinosaur. So, you know, I'm still doing it old school. I feel like I have more control that way. And, I'm always afraid of, you know, technology potentially getting away from me. And I don't ever want to have that issue.
Do you use any trading psychology? Do you believe in that? Have you read any books on it? Or are you doing anything to help you outside of trading to help you while you're trading?
Yes. And I highly believe in it. And actually, we haven't gotten into it, but I started a site, and on our site, we have a trading psychologist that talks to our community once a week. I fully believe in it. When I was trading big size, I talked with Ari Kiev. I don't know if you know who he was. He passed away, but he used to talk to Stevie Cohn, and, you know, spoken with him. And I fully believe it's important, you know, because you're doing something at a very, very, you know, whether you're small or large, you're doing it at a high mental level for yourself. And you definitely need to engage that to have the ability to mentally manage the P&L swings, which is one of the hardest things to do. And, you know, that's important, I think.
Is there anything specific that you do on a regular basis to help you with trading psychology?
Well, I do some exercise. I like to play hoops. I play basketball still. And I like to walk, you know, gather my thoughts. Now you're able to see everything on your phone, so you don't have to really be sitting in front of it per se. So, you know, I like to sort of be away from the noise and the chatter of the room. So I would say, you know, just doing some physical exercise and, you know, being in touch with the market, but sort of having a clear mind is important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You already mentioned that you started a site. It's called The Opportunistic Trader. So after all the years you've been in this business, why have you now decided to start this site, The Opportunistic Trader?
Well, I looked at this arena about 5 years ago, and I wanted to provide. I always ran money, you know, when I was at Spear Leeds and Kellogg, you know, I ran money for that firm, and I had really no interaction with other than traders that worked for me. And then when I had my hedge fund, I had hundreds of clients that were pension funds, high net worth, but I never had interaction, and I was never able to really teach or show people, you know, what I knew about the market and how important it was. And now I'm able to do this. And besides it being fun, I've gotten together a buddy of mine, Mark Fisher. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Mark, but he's probably the most talented oil trader in the country. Probably, you know, his P&L is unbelievable, and he has his own trading system. And I got about 14 or 15 other people on the site with me that have anywhere from, he probably has the most experience, over 40 years. I have 34, but, you know, the average experience of everyone we have is anywhere from 15 to 40 plus years. And I felt like it was a really big value add for what's in the marketplace as far as education, information, and, you know, trade thoughts. So I see what's out there, and I wanted to provide a product to the marketplace that I thought would be powerful and really help people and teach and have them learn sort of our strategy. And I always wanted to do it like at the school level, like teach at the local university. But by doing this and the power of the internet and the power of social media and marketing, you know, we're able to reach the full world. And, you know, we have people from all over the world on our site, you know, from India, from Europe, from Asia, you know, all over. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I really like to talk trading. It's really a passion and part of my life. And now I'm able to do it with guys I like, that I've known for a long time in the community. And we're giving out what I think is high, high quality information that will help people be successful and learn. So that's sort of why I'm doing it.
Great stuff, Larry. We're ready for some rapid fire questions if you're ready for those.
I got to sit down. No, I'm kidding. I'm good.
Don't worry. There's no prizes coming with these rapid fire questions. All right, everybody, our rapid fire segment is sponsored by Trading Technologies. Access the global markets from virtually anywhere with TT. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. And now you can trade cryptocurrency spot and derivative markets side by side. For more information, please visit tradingtechnologies.com. Larry, first question. What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
I would say a gentleman named Larry Lovecchio. In 1989, I was sort of knocking around as a trader in the XMI pit, wasn't really making money, was having a hard time. He saw that I guess I had what it took to be successful. He took me into Spear Leads and Kellogg in the XMI and sort of taught me how to be disciplined and how to take risk and become successful. So he would be someone that would be fit that.
What was one of the hardest things that you've had to overcome in trading?
Mentally handling losing. I was the toughest possible that on myself that a human could be. I would beat myself up and just, you know, I had a relentless will and still do to win, and just being very, very hard on myself.
How has your trading process evolved over the years?
I would say that it's evolved through discipline. I would say discipline is the key to everything in trading. I think becoming a little bit more patient, not having to trade every second of the day has helped me out, and having the ability to sit and watch the tape a bit.
What is one attribute that you believe every trader should have?
Good question. I would say aggressiveness, but humility.
What's your favorite book about trading?
Reminiscence of a Stock Operator, Jesse Livermore.
Favorite movie about trading?
Trading Places.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading?
That's a really good question. I would say the best piece of advice was given to me was to be patient, wait till you see the ball like it's a big softball, and then take advantage and rip it into the outfield over the fence.
If you could go back and give the younger you a piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say, don't be a knucklehead. No, I'm kidding. I would say that I would be more patient.
Last question for today, Larry. What's your favorite thing to do when you're not trading?
Spending time with my family.
Larry, where can people find you on Twitter, and give us a website to check out?
We are on Twitter at OpTrader1, and the website is The Opportunistic Trader.
Larry, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on Futures Radio Show today.
No, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.